Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
Gaius Octavian was henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian Caesar.
Welcome back. Life of Augustus, episode 8, Ray.
How's it going?
Ah, it's good, Ray.
God, I'm glad
we just finished episode 7, as you know, and I'm losing my voice, I think.
Oh, that doesn't bode well.
Ah.
Sign language. Go with sign language.
I'm going to end up sounding like Tom Waits. At the end of the road.
He makes it work for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where we finished off episode 7, big battle at Forum Galorum, outside of Mutina.
Right.
On one side, Mark Antony. On the other side, Hyrtaeus and Octavian defending the raw recruits of Pansa, who just witnessed, the raw recruits just witnessed Octavian's Praetorian Guard and Antony's Praetorian Guard going at it mano a mano in complete silence. Octavian's entire Praetorian Guard gets wiped out to the last man, according to Appian. And the new legions that Pansa brought turn and run like scared little bitches back to the camp that they had built overnight. They just saw this. Imagine this, you're like a kid, you're right. 18, 19, you've just signed up, and you just see these old grizzly veterans just killing each other in complete silence, and you're just like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into?
Why am I here right now wearing this and have the sword in my hand? If I could just clarify one thing, Octavian is back at the camp. He was left in charge of the two camps, which is not the most exciting job in the world, but someone's got to be in charge and keep an eye on that. So they're pushing his men back. Pansa and his officers come up with their four legions. They stop this bloodbath and this retreat from becoming a total rout, as in running all the way back to Rome. Like you said, they run back to the camp they had built the night before. What's left of the men that came with Hyrtaeus go into that camp as well, and Mark Antony's men start attacking that camp. They try really hard, but they can't get inside of it, because you could be the worst Roman soldier in the world, but probably the first thing that you learn is how to build a fort. So I'm sure it was a decent fort, even though they're raw recruits. I'm sure it was a stout fort, and they're able to keep the Antonians out. Even though they're scared shitless right now, the fort is holding up against the onslaught.
But unfortunately, on the way back to the camp, Pansa, co-consul with Hyrtaeus, gets a javelin in the stomach.
And not like, oh, 'tis a scratch. We're talking... So he is mortally wounded. He is taken back to the camp. He's laid up. He's not going anywhere for a while, but he obviously can't participate. Now, what I thought was interesting, and this is where Marcus Antonius makes a mistake. He's probably all excited that he's winning. He's got this camp surrounded, but he forgets his men are human and they're getting tired. They've been at this, for hours. And one of the books that I read made a point that Julius Caesar, the dictator, would have had the presence of mind to stop because you're winning and it's starting to get dark. Build a camp right there, because you know how fast these guys can build a camp. Build a camp right there to keep the pressure on them and have food and water brought to his men, because they've done well. And they've lost a decent amount, but they've done well. They're winning, but they're tired. If you keep pushing this, something bad can happen. Build a camp, get your men rested, get them fed up, and in the morning, finish off the fort. But Marcus Antonius does not do that. He keeps his men pushing his men, but only until rather late does he realize what's going on. And instead of building a fort, he starts marching them back towards his original camp that has got Decimus blocked in. So these guys have been fighting all day long. They think they've won. They're singing victorious songs. They're not in any true formation. And they start walking back to their camp. And it's getting dark.
And this is, again, where we see why Julius Caesar was the greatest general in that era. I mean,
yeah,
we've seen Caesar win, shit, how many campaigns did we cover over, like, 15 years?
Yeah.
Endless. And, you know, quite often up against superior numbers, hemmed in, trapped, like in Alexandria. You know, he's thinking through the it's not just exactly what happens on the battlefield. He's thinking about what's the next step, what are the other guys doing, where are they, what do we have to be, you know, he's got it all figured out.
Match. Yeah.
This is Antony's first campaign as commander in chief.
Right.
Up until now, everything he's ever done, and it hasn't been that much, let's remember, Pharsalus, I think. He's only been involved in a couple of campaigns, and he was always taking orders from the
exactly
big JC. This is his first campaign as commander of his own troops, and he makes a massive blunder.
Yeah.
Massive blunder. And, you know, first time out of the gates. First time out, massive blunder.
Exactly, yeah. Now, just the way it goes. So these guys are marching back. They're singing their songs. I don't know any victorious Roman army songs, but so they're singing songs. At the very
we're
least,
the Romans.
We
kill the Christians. That's a
something like that.
That's a Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly sketch.
So he is a great historian.
We hate the Christians.
But at the very least, if that had been Caesar in that spot, the Caesar, and he didn't build a fort, he would have marched the men back in some kind of protective formation, because that's what you do. Prudence, military prudence, means you're going to live another day to fight. So they're going back. And as we said before, Octavian's back at the two forts. Hirtius, maybe an Octavian, who knows, but Hirtius has pretty much figured out what's going on, because they've been keeping the attack of the fort pretty much away from there. And Hirtius is like, okay, this is too easy. This is not the bulk of their forces. Oh, crap, they're going after Pansa. So Hirtius figures it out, or maybe he gets intelligence, I don't know. He takes the bulk of the 4th Legion and the 7th Legion, and they go after, hoping to catch up to Pansa. So just as Mark Antony's men are turning around, they're exhausted, they're tired, but they're happy, and they're back slapping each other, suddenly there's this fresh army with Hirtius right there, and the Antonians are not even lined up. So the best of their ability, they get in some kind of quick line, quick formation. Hirtius's men come, but it's not even a contest. They're just too tired. They can't swing the swords like they were, and it just becomes a rout. They just shatter the 2nd and 35th legions of Marcus Antonius. They break. They have heavy casualties. They're running, hiding in the marshes. They're losing men left and right, and it just becomes what had been a great day for Marcus Antonius, a victory. Now it turns into a bloody, awful defeat, a shattering defeat for these two legions.
Yeah, they lose their eagles and half of their standards. And, you know, it reminds me of Waterloo.
Yeah.
For people that don't know the Battle of Waterloo, Napoleon, don't know the proper version of it anyway, the version that I tell,
damn
which
right
is the only
damn right
historically accurate version. Forget everything that you've heard about the Battle of Waterloo. Napoleon had pretty much defeated Wellington at Waterloo. It was late in the day, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Again, his guys are exhausted, but they've won. And they're, you know, just sort of mopping up the British forces under the Duke of Wellington, who was a pussy and a bitch.
With nice boots.
And then the Prussians under Blücher come over the horizon. Napoleon had sent one of his guys to block Blücher. He was going to tackle him the next day, but they fucked up.
Yeah.
And the Prussians come in at the last minute when Napoleon's guys have... Napoleon hasn't held back anything in reserve. He's, you know, sent all of his guys, including his Imperial Guard, in to defeat Wellington. And then the Prussians come over the horizon with, I think, 40,000 fresh troops.
Jeez.
And that's what won the Battle of Waterloo. Now, I know all of my British listeners are going, but they were all under the command of Wellington, and Wellington, I love Wellington. I want to lick
That's
his,
not the point.
I want to lick his nipples. Yeah. Point is, on the battlefield, he was defeated. And they were mano a mano in terms of the numbers that he had against Napoleon. Defeated, crushed.
Right.
Until, yeah. Anyway. Go yeah. listen to the Napoleon series that I did with my old mate, David Markham.
It was awesome.
Yes, just, and if you don't think so, just ask him.
Yeah, no, yeah, he was awesome. Just real quick, isn't it? And I'm paraphrasing a saying of Napoleon was something like the soldiers march on their stomach or live by their stomach or something like that. You've got to take care
of an army marches on its stomach.
Oh, marches on its stomach. There we go. And that's something that Marcus Antonius did not take into consideration, obviously, because he was born before Napoleon, but he should have known it working with Caesar, and he did.
He hadn't read his Napoleon.
Yeah, had but, much.
Like, he should have, at least suspected that his path back to the camp would be blocked by these guys. They've been out all day. Like, they're not idiots.
Right.
So anyway, we don't know what he was thinking, what he wasn't thinking. But anyway, as you say, complete rout, except for his cavalry. He sends his cavalry out during the night to find the guys that are hiding in the scrub and bring them back to camp.
I respect that.
He's not wiped out by any means. He's still got the 5th Alidae and enough forces to even continue to blockade Mutina. Still got his cavalry, more numbers, better quality than the other guys got. But he's definitely on the back foot now.
Can I just want to read a short passage from Appian about when he sends his cavalry out to gather as many men as he can, not only because it's good for him, but that's what you do, you take care of your men. But Appian writes about the cavalry who are sent out. They put the survivors on their horses, changing places with some and lifting others up beside them, or they made them hold on to the tail and encourage them to run along with them. So that literally he sent his men out to gather them in any way you could, by hook, by crook, throw them across the saddle. Here, hold on to the tail and I'll guide you, because it's dark and you don't know where in the fuck you're at and you're probably bleeding or hurt. So he did get as many men as he could, but it still was a complete disaster. But like you said, he still has more than enough men to keep the blockade going and to keep pressure on the two forts that Octavian is now in charge of until Hyrtius gets back.
So over the next few days, there are some skirmishes. Hyrtius and Octavian offer battle to Antony several times, but he declines. But finally, after about a week of this, he gives battle and is defeated.
Yeah. Now, I had read something where Hyrtius kind of came in from the rear, which is obviously a very Roman Greek thing to do. So he comes around, and they're able to bust into the camp because, again, like you said, Mark Antony, even though he's still strong, he doesn't have as many men as he did. So they're able to break into his camp proper, cause a lot of trouble. As far as I know, Octavian is not first in, but I think Hyrtius with his men are, and some crazy shit's going to go down. But they're able to bust through the line and get into Mark Antony's camp and raise all kind of hell.
But in the process, Hyrtius, the other consul, is killed in the action. Now, one consul dead, the other almost dead. Now, there is suggestions, and I think Antony was probably the first to raise these.
Yeah, bastard.
That they were both killed by friendly fire on the orders of Octavian. We don't have any evidence to support that. And yes, Antony would say that, but, maybe. Who knows, man? Maybe Octavian had them both killed.
Yeah. Now, the thing, I was just going to say, because for the other consuls, that Plancus, I'm trying to write too many names now. But the first consul, he's mortally wounded, and he actually.
Panza,
thank you. He lasts for a couple days or weeks or whatever, and then he suddenly takes a turn for the worst, and then he dies. And so they arrest the doctor. You know, did anybody put you up to this? Are you doing this? You know, did Octavius do this? And if you think about it, yeah, before you die, you would take a turn for the worst, you dumbass. That's probably why you died. So there were some accusations going on and whatever, but at the end, like you said, there was no proof. I just think it was the god Romulus, who's now up there in the Pantheon, and he's looking after his chosen on this bullshit. But anyway, it's just what happens, because how many times have we said where Caesar has fought with his troops or he was right behind the front line, especially in his younger years? That's what the Roman generals did. They had their sash, they had their plume helmet or whatever, and they were easy to spot, but they were right behind the main line giving orders. And so their chances of getting hurt and or killed were pretty decent. And I just believe that's what happened to Hyrtius breaking into this camp. It was a very condensed area with a lot of troops. And I just think it was just total, you know, fortunes of war. But that's my take on it.
But
here we go.
If there is any truth to the rumor that several years earlier, Hyrtius had paid 300,000 sestertii to stick his old fella in Octavian's virginal butthole.
Right.
Maybe Octavian was looking for some payback. You know what, bitch? How do you like it? How do you like it?
Oh, you're dead? You can't feel that? Oh, okay, never mind.
Now, Antony also claimed that during these battles, Octavian fled the field and abandoned his red general's cloak.
Yeah.
But again, all the historians say, well, he would say that, you know, and there's no evidence of that outside of Antony claiming it. And Antony's just, you know, at this stage still, you know, claiming, you know, just try to slander Octavian left,
as
right,
much
and center.
As you can, yeah. Now, just to give everybody some context, this battle where they break into the camp, as far as I can tell, happens either on or around April 21st. And up until this point, Octavian hadn't done much. He had pretty much been in charge of the two camps. So some people said he was trying to make up for it by rushing in there. And I read on one source where he was able to grab Hyrtius's body and drag it out of there. Mm. And in one version, he grabbed, like, I guess the eagle of the legion, mm-hmm. and held it up after the carrier was injured. So who knows what was true, but you've got to think, even though he's probably scared shitless, he's never been in battle before. He has never seen a battle. He's 19 years old, but you got to think he's got to throw himself into this and make a name for himself. And it's got to start here, especially when your adopted father is the fucking Caesar.
Yeah, but I don't know about that. Like, you know, he is not of that tradition. He's not like Caesar. He hasn't been with the army for 10 years.
But that's what's expected of Roman generals, is my point. I mean, he's got to...
I don't know, though. Do you think they would expect that of this kid? I mean, they know who this kid is. Like, they know he's young, he's weak, he's sick, he's ill. He's sort of... he's not a soldier. I don't think the centurions... would necessarily expect him to all of a sudden be the leader of their army and you know, this brave warrior. Because, like, when Caesar first went out and took command of Gaul, he was 41, 42. He'd already been consul.
Right.
I mean, there's a big difference between doing that, and he'd seen action before that.
He fought in Spain, yeah.
Yeah. Big difference being 41, 42, taking command of an army and being a 19-year-old kid. I think, you know, I imagine it went down that Octavian and his inner circle, Agrippa and Balbus and these guys, said to the centurions, listen, we're paying you a shitload of money because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's a kid. We're paying you to know, you know, to take command out there. Yeah. That's why, you know, you were with Caesar for X number of years. We're paying you to do this thing. He's, you know, he's just the money man. He's the kid that's going to make it possible. But you're
mascot,
don't,
if you will.
Don't look to him. Well, he's the financier. He's not the military genius.
He's the
genius.
Brand name. He's the brand name, like Trump. He's the brand name.
Let's not get into Trump.
Okay, no.
So look. So I don't know, but I mean, he's definitely not Julius Caesar. But I'm not blaming him for that. I'm not going, you weak sissy. Like,
well, that wasn't his life. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I don't think we can expect him to be at the front knowing what to do. I mean, he'd done a little bit of training in Apollonia to get ready for Parthen before the assassination. But even then, he wasn't expected to be a full leader at that age. I think he was training to, you know, have a role. He would have been on the battlefield. He would have been seeing it for the first time, because remember, he got to Spain too late to see any of the action.
Right.
So he would have been witnessing, learning on the job, training, listening to the centurions, You know, obviously listening to Caesar, watching how Caesar operated. And all of these guys, all of his main guys, particularly the ones that were with him in Apollonia, they know where he's at. They know he's just, he's a kid. He's got training wheels on. So I think it's entirely unrealistic to expect him to do anything more than just so you go. Yeah. Not go and hide under a rock like I would. Fuck.
Now, from what I read, Hyrtias, when he was killed, was fighting near the commander's tent lines. So they had gotten into the fort pretty far. They had taken some key positions of the of Marcus Antonius's camp, and it was quickly becoming untenable. So yes, you lose the second consul, but he had done good work up until that moment, and things are not looking good for Marcus Antonius at all. This camp is not going to survive this assault. That's not going to survive until the next day. And so he's got to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. And so he does, and he's not pursued very strongly, which again, you know, a major tactical flaw on behalf of the other side now, which is basically Octavian's troops. You know what Caesar would have done if he was around. He would have pursued him and crushed him while he had the chance.
He would have rode his ass. He would have thrown the horse on his back, chased after Mark Anthony and running through with a sword. Yeah, he would have.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, but we have to keep in mind too that Octavian needs Antony's troops too.
Exactly. Like,
he doesn't want to crush them. He just wants to defeat them enough till, you know, they come over. He probably wants Antony dead, and he just wants the troops, or maybe, you know.
Or at least he wants Mark Antony pliable.
Yes.
So there could be. Now, here's my thing, and not to jump too far ahead, but I just want to say this real quick. So, and here's one instance where, if this is true, I respect Mark Antony. So he slips away with as many men as he can. Some of them are killed, some of them are captured, some of them get away. But he crosses over the Alps into to the long-haired Gaul, and he shares the suffering of his men. They're going along. They don't have any provisions. They had to get the hell out of there. They're drinking foul water. They're eating wild fruit and roots, and they literally are going to keep going until they feel like they're safe. But if he does share that experience with him, for those that are still with him, they've got to respect that. Because that's something Caesar would have done. Caesar would have been right down there with him. But what I found interesting, because Marcus Antonius was not pursued, was because Decimus Brutus was not in any position. His men were weak. He was weak. They ate all their fucking horses and mules and whatever else they had. And from what I can read, Octavian refused to chase him. In fact, he had caught one of Marcus Antonius's officers, treated him nicely, and let him go. So he refused to go, and Decimus Brutus was in really no shape to pursue him. So Marcus Antonius is going to get away, but already there's a rift, from what I could tell, between Octavian and Decimus Brutus from the second that he is freed from being encircled by Mark Antony's camp.
Yeah, and that's because when the two consuls are dead or out of action, power then goes to the consul elect for the next year, who was Decimus Brutus. Who gave him that job? Julius Caesar, the guy he killed. So now, and so there's no fucking way Octavian is taking orders from one of Caesar's assassins.
Hell no.
And remember, these guys know each other pretty well. They rode in a carriage together all the way back from Spain,
which
probably took a month. So every day they were sitting there. So you know, tell me something you've never told anyone else. Like, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite movie? So they've spent a lot of time with each other, but no love. And then Decimus turns around and stabs Caesar literally in the back. So. There's no way Octavian's going to listen to him. Decimus is pissy about that. Appian writes, when Decimus was delivered from the siege, he began to be afraid of Octavius, whom, after the removal of the two consuls, he feared as an enemy. So he broke down the bridge over the river before daybreak. This is the bridge, you know, that connects Mutina to the land, and sent certain persons to Octavius in a boat, as if to return thanks for rescuing him, and asked that Octavius would come to the opposite bank of the river to hold a conversation with him in the presence of the citizens as witnesses, because he could convince Octavius, he said, that an evil spirit had deceived him and led him into the conspiracy against Caesar with the others.
Oh, shit.
Now, first of all, why did he have a fucking bridge? He's trying to keep... He's been under siege by Mark Antony for months. Why was there still a bridge? Did he maybe build a bridge when Antony left and then tear the bridge down again? I don't know. I think he would have destroyed the bridge a lot earlier if you were being laid siege to.
Well, the only thing I could think of was because Marcus Antonius did not try to purposefully attack. You know, he would have used the bridge, but again, he's just trying to starve him out. But that's only my guess. But there's a quote that I have, and I can't tell if it's Appian or whatever, but of Decimus Brutus, Octavius says, "Nature forbids me either to set eyes on or talk to Decimus. Let him seek his own safety." As in, that bitch means nothing to me. Fuck him.
Yeah, that's Appian. So, I'm still in the middle of this thing.
Sorry.
That was part of it. That's all right. You just jump in anytime. It's fine. I don't mind.
Okay.
Now, an evil spirit. He was going to convince Octavian that an evil spirit had deceived him.
That's right.
I want to see the argument for that. Octavius answered the messages in a tone of anger, declining the thanks that Decimus gave him, saying, "I am here not to rescue Decimus, but to fight Antony, with whom I may properly come to terms sometime. But nature forbids that I should even look at Decimus or hold any conversation with him. Let him have safety, however, as long as the authorities at Rome please." Damn. So don't kill him, but I'm not having anything to do with him. I'm not going to take orders from him. I don't even want to see him.
I can help him. Yeah.
When Decimus heard this, he stood on the riverbank and, calling Octavius by name, read with a loud voice the letters of the Senate, giving him command of the Gallic province, and forbade Octavius to cross the river without consular authority into the government belonging to another, and not to follow Antony further, because he, Decimus, would suffice for the pursuit of the latter. Octavius knew that he was prompted to this audacious course by the Senate, and although able to seize him by giving an order, he spared him for the present and withdrew to Pansa at Bononia, where he wrote a full report to the Senate, and Pansa did likewise. So Decimus says, "You're not allowed to follow Antony. I'm going to follow Antony."
Mm-hmm.
But Decimus's men had been starved from low rations for several months, and he's also short of money. So he doesn't follow up. Octavian doesn't follow up. So Antony gets away. By the way, Decimus also didn't have any horses or pack animals because they ate them all. So I don't know how he was going to follow up.
Yeah. Hmm. Jeez. Yeah. Now, I'm trying to think, did Octavian see Pansa one more time before he died? Yeah, so that's where some of those accusations come, that he either killed him himself or had the doctor do it or what the fuck ever. But when you got a hole in your stomach from a spear that's probably not super clean, you could probably die.
Yeah, you could probably, particularly back then. Now... he does go and see him, and Octavian now effectively has control of not only his own, but the consul's legions as well. So he's now got 7 or 8 legions. Four of those are new recruits, admittedly.
Yeah.
But they're still cannon fodder.
Yeah.
Of his own. Now, compared this, I think we said Antony had 3 plus his auxiliary cavalry, and a couple of those have been wiped out. So... but he's going to get some reinforcements. Let's not worry about Antony too much. Now, now getting back to who, you know, whether or not Octavian gave orders for Hirtius and Pansa to be killed in friendly fire. There's a story that at Forum Glorum, one of the commanders of the Martyr was nearly killed by one of Pansa's new recruits, who only recognized him in the last moment. So it's fairly easy, particularly when you've got Romans fighting Romans, for people to get killed in the cut and thrust and get mistaken for the enemy and all that kind of stuff.
They're wearing the same fucking stuff.
Yeah. Although the consuls, you would imagine, would have red general's cloaks, but, you know. And also, And, you know, you throw a spear and your aim is off.
Yeah, you know where it's going.
Now, in the meantime, according to Appian, Panzer was dying of his wound, and he summoned Octavius to his side and said, "I loved your father as I did myself, yet I could not avenge his death, nor could I fail to unite with the majority, whom you have also done well to obey, although you have an army. At first they feared you and Antony, and especially Antony, as he seemed to be the one most ambitious to fill the role of Caesar. And they were delighted with your dissensions, thinking that you would mutually destroy each other. When they saw you the master of an army, they complimented you as a young man with specious and inexpensive honours. When they saw that you were more proud and self-restrained in respect of honours than they had supposed, and especially when you declined the magistracy that your army offered you, they were alarmed, and they appointed you to the command with us in order that we might draw your two experienced legions away from you, hoping that when one of you was vanquished, the other would be weakened and isolated, and so the whole of Caesar's party would be effaced and that of Pompey would be restored to power. This is their chief aim. Hirtius and I did what we were ordered to do until we could humble Antony, who was much too arrogant. But we intended that when he was vanquished, to bring him into alliance with you and thus to pay the debt of gratitude we owed to Caesar's friendship, the only payment that could be serviceable to Caesar's party hereafter. It was not possible to communicate this to you before, but now that Antony is vanquished and Hirtius dead, and I am about to pay the debt of nature, the time for speaking has come. Not that you may be grateful to me after my death, but that you, born to a happy destiny, as your deeds proclaim, may know what is for your own interest, and know that the course taken by Hirtius and myself was a matter of necessity. The army that you yourself gave to us should most properly be given back to you, and I do give it. If you can take and hold the new levies, I will give you those also. If they are too much in awe of the Senate, for their officers were sent to act as spies upon us, and if the task would be an invidious one and would create trouble for you prematurely, the quaestor Torquatus will take command of them." After speaking thus, he transferred the new levies to the quaestor and expired. The quaestor transferred them to Decimus, as the Senate had ordered. Octavius sent the bodies of Hirtius and Pansa with honours to Rome, where they received a public funeral.
Damn.
So, according to Appian, Pansa told Octavian the layup.
Damn.
Now, Suetonius writes, "The circumstances of Pansa's death in particular were so mysterious that the physician Glyco was imprisoned on the charge of having applied poison to his wound."
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, he's already got a hole in his stomach. He doesn't really need poison, but fine. Okay. Yeah,
maybe he's just trying to speed it up.
Speed it up.
So,
yeah.
Well, so I mean, okay, you want to play devil's advocate. So Octavian can now say, "Well, Pansa told me in his dying breath that I should get these troops back," and no one can go, "Well, let's go check with Pansa and see what he says." Oh, well, we could, but he unfortunately passed away straight
can't
away.
Can't confirm anything. Yeah. Mm. So not to jump the gun too much, but because when the fighting had first started south. And Pansa's raw recruits were defeated, the Senate is starting to hear rumors. So the Senate hears that Mark Antony won, and then they get the full story. So it's almost like a, "Oh my God, no, wait, what, yay!" And then the consuls die. Aw. So they're all over the fucking place. So it's just crazy. So like you said, they praise the consuls, they praise Octavian, and they think and they truly believe and they are very excited, Cicero, very much so, that Mark Antony has been defeated. He hasn't just been pushed away. He has been defeated. He has been crushed. They don't know anything different than that. And so I guess maybe as a slap to the dictator Caesar, the Senate gives a public thanksgiving of 50 days, where that was much more than what Caesar had ever earned, I guess, fighting the Germans. And so they're going to party. And now there's even talk, and I do not get this. Please make this make sense to me. The Senate already starts talking about coming up with a commission to demobilize the troops and start passing out land to all these men. I guess they truly believe Mark Antony's been beaten, and it's all over.
Yeah. This That's public insane. Thanksgiving, yeah. 50 days, as you said, the biggest Thanksgiving ever given to anyone ever, bigger than Sulla or Pompey or even Julius Caesar himself.
Right.
And it's for fighting a civil war, something which normally you don't make a big deal out of because it's abhorrent.
Yeah.
And what had Antony ever done? It's not like Antony had prescriptions and had everyone killed. He was consul yesterday. He didn't assassinate Caesar. He didn't go on a bloody revenge against the assassins. He gave them amnesty. He had just basically, I mean, maybe he'd thrown a bit of weight around as he was consul, but so does every consul that had ever happened. Cicero had people executed without trial when he was consul 20 years ago. What had Antony done to deserve a public thanksgiving of 50 days to celebrate his defeat? He didn't back off and put down the siege against Decimus when he was told to, and it was given to me by the people, blah 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 speech that we read in the last episode.
But he's accurate. But he's right. He didn't kill anybody. He relinquishes the consulship when his time comes. He has the people give him a province. I mean, he was a bit of a dick, but he wasn't breaking massive laws. He didn't kill anybody, and now he is declared a public enemy. And the Senate also takes Brutus and Cassius, and they now legitimize what they had done with their armies and their provinces. They're raping the land left and right. They've taken over troops. They've killed people. And that becomes okay. Mark Antony's the public enemy, and all he did was be on the other side of Cicero. Cicero used his power, his prestige, his ability to give speeches and sway people, and it's a personal grudge match between Mark Antony and Cicero, and at this point in time, Cicero is winning.
Yeah, and you know, it's Cicero that pushes all this through. So when you're thinking about Cicero's character, think about this, that he pushed for a public thanksgiving of 50 days for defeating a guy who really, on paper, hasn't done anything majorly wrong.
Appian writes, "Dick is not illegal."
Yeah, look at Donald Trump. Appian says, "In Rome, Cicero read to the people the report of the consul, and to the Senate alone that of Octavius. For the victory over Antony, he caused them to vote a thanksgiving of 50 days, a longer festivity than the Romans had ever decreed, even after the Gallic or any other war. He induced them to give the army of the consuls to Decimus, although Pansa was still alive, for his life was now despaired of, and to appoint Decimus the sole commander against Antony." So, you know, Octavian had recently been made commander of the forces of the Senate. Now he's saying they should give it to Decimus. "Public prayers were offered that Decimus might prevail over him. Such was Cicero's passion and want of decorum in reference to Antony. He confirmed again to the two legions that had deserted from Antony the 5,000 drachmas per man previously promised to them as the rewards of victory, as though they had already conquered, and gave them the perpetual right to wear the olive crown at the public festivals." There was nothing about Octavius in the decrees, and his name was not even mentioned.
Damn. That's a bitch slap right there. That's a bitch slap. Now, here's my thing. All the work, I don't know what you want to call it, but all the work that Caesar, the dictator, had done over the years by adhering these men to him, by winning them over, by winning their absolute loyalty, trust, and even love is going to start. Hold on, someone's banging. Is going to start paying off, because when the Senate tells Octavian to give over the 4th and Martia legions to Decimus Brutus, now the one man in charge, they're going to go, "No, we refuse to work with someone who killed Caesar. We are not going to do it, and we are the guys with the swords."
Yeah, what the hell is he thinking?
Yeah.
Now, not everybody was celebrating this civil war. Pollio in Spain wrote back to Cicero saying that he thought it was a sad waste of Italy's finest sons. Decimus does try to follow Antony, but he escapes. At the start of May, Decimus writes a letter complaining that it's impossible to give orders to Caesar, Octavian, and impossible for him to give orders to his army, both bad things.
Yeah.
As you say, the Senate sent instructions to the 4th and the Mardi to be given to Decimus. They said, "Fuck off." So he probably takes command of the new recruits to set out after Antony, and they're not going to be much good for anything. Now, Antony, manages to join up with three fresh legions raised by one of Julius Caesar's old staff officers, Publius Ventidius Bassus. Now, I don't know if you know about Bassus, but...
I know, I like the name.
Yeah, well, he was given the name apparently because he was all about the bass.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no treble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no treble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no treble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass. Yeah, it's pretty clear, I ain't no size 2, but I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. Cause I got that boom boom that all the boys chase. All the right junk in all the right places. We see the magazines working that Photoshop. We know that shit ain't real. Come on now, make it stop. If you got beauty, beauty, just raise it up. Cause every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top.
Now, I don't know if you know this, Ray, but when we record, there is a slight lag. It's only like a fraction of a second.
Oh, shit. Okay.
But when you sing and clap along to the songs, there's a lag.
I can't sing and clap anymore? Okay.
Well, you never could, but I do try in editing to sync you up as best as I can with it. Okay. Sometimes I don't even bother, but sometimes I try. But should you're I always, you're always, no, you'll be humming out of time, man. You're always out of time. It's always funny.
How about I just put mute and I'll stand up and dance?
Yeah.
And that will be the extent of my contribution.
But you have to dance like a Praetorian cohort, just silently. Well, yeah.
Hell yeah, is there any other way? But when Cicero was giving his speech and praising everybody, I can't prove this, but I'm pretty sure he had a Woody under the toga. He seemed pretty happy with the events as they, besides the two consuls dying, the way things had worked out. Because he honestly, to God, truly fucking hates Marcus Antonius. He sees him as either another Caesar or worse than Caesar, I don't know. But the man is on cloud nine right now.
He thinks he's worse because at least Caesar had done something. Yeah. At least he had some claim to authority. Yeah. Appian says that Cicero had taken control of Rome. He held frequent assemblies, procured arms by inducing the artificers to work without pay, collected money and exacted heavy contributions from the Antonians. These paid without complaining in order to avoid calumny. Calumny. I never know how to say that word. Calumny.
Calumny?
Trouble. Let's just call it trouble. Until Publius Ventidius, who was all about the base and had served under Gaius Caesar and was a friend of Antony, unable to endure the exactions of Cicero, betook himself to Caesar's colonies, where he was well known, and raised two legions for Antony and hastened to Rome to seize Cicero. The consternation was extreme. They removed most of the women and children in a panic, and Cicero himself fled from the city.
Run away!
When Ventidius learned this, he turned his course toward Antony. So that's why Antony got some new legions, is because Cicero was pissing people off so much that this guy was like, fuck you, and went and raised some new legions to go and support Antony.
Good gracious. Now, what about the, do you think it was, that there's truth to this, that on May 24th, when Decimus Brutus wrote to Cicero saying that that Octavian was going around repeating a phrase that Cicero had said, that said, we must praise the young man, reward him, and discard him. Because as far as I know, Cicero never denied that, which, why in the fuck would you say that if you didn't want it to get back to your enemy, who you're currently using to get rid of your other enemy?
Because he was a dickero. Yeah, like the rhythm apparently of the original Latin, laudanum adolescentum ornandum tollendum, reward him, praise, reward, and discard. They say that that sounds like something Cicero would have said. You know, he loved writing eloquent rhyming prose.
Complex,
that flowed well, suggests it probably is genuine. So what a fuck up that was. And I mean, and Octavian probably already knew what was going on, but to know that that's what Cicero is going around saying.
Yeah, what the fuck? Yeah.
Well, you know, Cicero has basically just signed his own death warrant, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, as you say, you don't put that in writing and you don't say that to people, you know?
Yeah, I imagine Philip, Alexander's father, he had plans and he kept his damn mouth shut and he got things done. I mean, but Cicero, you get the sense that Cicero is the kind of guy, he's just got to brag. He wants everybody to know how clever he is or how manipulative or whatever. I don't know. He to do something great and have no one know about it, I think would just eat Cicero up. It's got to be known. He's got to put it out there.
Yeah.
To me, that's one of his flaws.
But put it out there after you kill him.
Wait a couple years.
Okay, he's got to, you know, tell people what the plan is, I guess, some people. But keep it quiet. And anyway, so this gets out.
Yeah.
Before that, though, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Antony. So,
yes, please.
Antony meets up with Ventidius all about the base, and their entire force crosses over into Transalpine Gaul, aka France, give or take. Now, Lepidus and Plancus are told to move against him by the Senate because he's now been declared a public enemy. But all of their officers are veterans of Julius Caesar. People may recall that on the Ides of March, Lepidus was master of the horse under the dictator.
Right.
So he and Antony are fairly friendly. Now, in May, Antony's army camps next to Lepidus's army.
Yeah.
And basically, the commanders of both sides get to talking and just go, do you want to kill us? Do you want to kill us? No, we don't want to kill you. Do you want to kill us? No, we don't want to kill you. So they just go, turn around to their respective commanders and go, not going to happen. We're not going to kill each other. So you guys figure it out. Because we're not killing each other. And so Lepidus's legions declare for Antony. Lepidus does too. One of his senatorial subordinates commits suicide over the shame, but most of so Lepidus and Antony are now allies. They're joined by Plancus and Asinius Pollio as well.
Yeah.
So the public enemy who a Thanksgiving of 50 days has just been declared for.
The defeat of, He's suddenly stronger. Yeah.
And as you said, the Senate have announced they're going to demobilize Decimus and Octavian's legions because they're not needed anymore, is now stronger than ever.
Total cock up. So here's my thing. Because a lot of these officers and a lot of the men have fought for Caesar, they all used to work together. And now just because of pay, they're supposed to go around and ruthlessly kill each other. I mean, these guys have known each other for years. And yeah, like you said, they took one look at each other and go, I'm not going to do this unless you two guys, Marcus Antonius and Lepidus, want to throw down, each get a sword and tie a rope around your left wrist or whatever and go at it. That's fine, but we are not going to do this just for pay and end up killing each other. That's just stupid. And so it works out beautifully for Marcus Antonius. And I think Lepidus is the kind of guy who's like, okay, yeah, I can go along with that. He's not as dynamic. I get the sense he's not as dynamic as Marcus Antonius. And he's like, okay, I will serve under you. I'm okay with that. And so, like you said, Marcus Antonius's legions are now just exploding. He's got more men than he's ever had before, certainly more than the Senate has.
Although it wasn't that long ago that Marcus Antonius was having his own troops decimated for not obeying the commands of their general. Now, these guys aren't obeying the commands of their general, but he's not
in a good way
executed.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, so the Senate doesn't know this is going on, obviously. As far as they know, Lepidus and Plancus are fighting Antony, who's weakened.
Yeah, get it.
They probably don't even know about Ventidius and his legions. So they vote Decimus a triumph in the Senate. Octavian is given the lesser honor of an ovation.
Or a golf clap.
The Octavian ovation. Octavation, as they call it.
Octavation, I like that.
Octavation. Much lesser, basically a clap. Yeah, as you say.
They give a clap.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole victory was down to Octavian, who put together the troops, the main fighting force.
Right.
But he doesn't get the triumph. Decimus, who did nothing except hide.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He's hiding behind walls.
Triumph.
He gets a triumph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most generals would go an entire lifetime of service to the state and not get a triumph. So this is truly a watered-down, weak-willed, sheep-filled Senate, and Cicero was just having his way with the sheep. That came out, you know what I mean. Yeah.
And they decide to demobilize their legions. And the kicker, the Senate decides they're only going to pay Octavian's legions half of what they promised. And they're only going to pay the fourth and the martyr. They're not going to pay the rest of the legions.
Jeez. So the let me just ask a question here. So Cicero and the Senate, loosely, pretty much make it known they're manipulating this kid and they're going to get rid of him. And then they go back on their deal. And he's the one with the fucking guys with swords all over the place. Not the smartest move a bunch of old men in togas can make.
Yeah, look, I don't know. It's dumb. I think Cicero even knew this was all dumb.
I mean, until I see Mark Antony's head on a pike, I want all the guys around me with swords loyal to me, and I will pay you whatever. And because this is, I mean, you've defeated him, but this is not over yet, so... Maybe it was just bad communication or hopeful thinking or whatever, but yeah, just a stupid move on the Senate's part. But you really do get the sense that there's no more wolves in the Roman Senate.
Except Cicero.
Except, yeah.
Oh my God. So they also have welcomed back Sextus Pompey's
son. Yay!
And obviously Octavian knows that all of this is going to hell in a handbasket. Now, Appian claims it's around this time that Octavian first reaches out to Lepidus and Pollio, suggesting that they and Antony and him should all join forces against the Pompeians. You know, he's thought about what Antony said in his letter. He's looking at what's going on, how he's being treated. He's heard that Cicero is running around saying they're going to just use him, then discard him like an old tissue. He sees that they're befriending Decimus and Brutus and Cassius, giving them power, all of his father's assassins.
Yeah, youngest Pompey. I mean, that's a slap in the face to everything, to anybody who holds Caesar dear in their memory.
They give Decimus, who did fucking nothing.
Fuck knuckles, nothing.
A triumph. He's one of Caesar's assassins.
Yeah. One of the main assassins.
One of the guys who set it up.
Jabbed it. Yeah, this is Cicero's doing. Yeah, absolutely.
So he is not happy and he starts to make a move. Now, right about the same time, both consuls are dead now. The year isn't out. Decimus is consul-elect, but that doesn't take effect until the next year.
Right.
So there's a rumor running around that Octavian is trying to make a play to make himself consul.
Ah, gotcha.
He may have approached Cicero about being his co-consul. Now, he doesn't trust Cicero, but I think what he's doing here is just keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. He, in fact, apparently says this to Lepidus, that we have to make it look like we are on their side, but really what we should be doing is ganging up against Cicero and the Pompeians.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if we've really stressed this enough, but ever since Octavius has come into Cicero's life, or the other way around, there's been a decent fair amount of fake platitudes and respect. And whenever Octavius is around Cicero, he's feigned respect and looking up to the elder statesman and all that stuff. And of course, that strokes Cicero's ego to no end. And so he's been like, you know, nice to the young man, but I'm sure in a condescending way. And so I'm sure that on the surface, this game is still playing out. They're trying to use each other, but they're smiling at each other. And in public, there's no, it's like this true uneven relationship where you got the stately old man, you got the up and coming kid who's young enough to fight. And so they're going through the motions, but yeah, they're each trying to use each other and get what they want out of this weird relationship and all the events as fast as are happening in Rome. And it's not going to work out that way, but they're both playing the game. And I think they both know that they're playing the game.
Oh, I think Octavian knows. I don't know that Cicero is giving Octavian enough credit at this point. I think he sees Octavian as just, you know, a kid who inherited a lot of money and a name. But I don't think either he or Antony are yet giving Octavian that much credit. And maybe he, you know, I still think he probably doesn't deserve the credit. I think it's probably the guys in the shadows pulling his strings or advising him.
Yeah.
I don't think it's reasonable to think he's some sort of tactical genius, strategic genius here.
No.
But anywho, whatever's going on, he's starting to make his play. Now, Marcus Brutus, tu Brute Brutus, in Macedonia, he hears the story that Cicero is already taken over one of the consular posts.
Right.
And now, meanwhile, Cicero's writing to him saying, hey, we need your troops, come home. And he's like, fuck you, dude. I'm not sure I trust you. Yeah. Appian writes, the Pompeians also sought the consulship for the remainder of the year in place of Hyrtius and Pansa. But Octavius also sought it, applying not to the Senate but to Cicero privately, whom he urged to become his colleague, saying that Cicero should carry on the government as he was the elder and more experienced, and that he, Octavius, would enjoy the title only, by which means he could dismiss his army in a becoming manner, for which reason he had previously asked the honour of a triumph. Cicero, whose desire for office was excited by this proposal, said to the Senate that he understood that a negotiation was on foot among the generals commanding the provinces, and he advised that they should conciliate the man whom they had treated with disdain and who was still at the head of a large army, and allow him to hold office in the city, notwithstanding his youth, rather than that he should remain under arms in a hostile attitude. But lest he should do anything contrary to the interest of the Senate, Cicero proposed that some man of prudence from among the older ones should be chosen as his colleague as a firm check upon the immaturity of Octavius.
Bullshit.
I don't know who. no one,
looking around.
I've got a sense that there's probably some wise elder statesman. What? Me?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't thinking me.
I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, well, now that you mention it.
That's a maybe. Good idea. Yeah.
Appian continues, the Senate laughed at Cicero's ambition, and the relatives of the conspirators especially opposed him, fearing lest Octavius, as consul, should bring the murderers to punishment.
Yeah.
Now, apparently Brutus hears all of this and accuses Cicero in a letter of, trying to finagle himself and Octavian as consul. Cicero writes back to Brutus and says, what are you talking about?
No, I
never suggested that. In fact, I spoke out in the Senate against elevating Octavian to consul. And, you know, probably he did after he realized that
it wasn't going to fly.
But he must have still been speaking highly of Octavian, both in private and in public, because Brutus took him to task with that, basically says that he thinks Cicero is too easily flattered. And he should know, because this is the guy who, as he stabs Caesar to death, called out to Cicero in the Senate, Cicero! Take command of the Republic. Now Cicero's going, I want to take command of the Republic. And Brutus is going, nah.
No, you had your chance.
Nah. I think you're just too much of a bitch.
So that was not KC and the Sunshine Band.
Ah.
No, I'm off. Okay.
The motherfucking Rolling Stones, man. Anyway, yeah. So he basically, Brutus accuses Cicero of being a bit of a bitch. Now, you know, I think, again, when we're assessing the character of Cicero, we need to take this into account. Brutus, guy who thought so highly of Cicero that he called out to him, not highly enough to get him involved in the conspiracy because they didn't trust him.
No.
But he called out to him to take command of the Republic after the assassination of Caesar. But even Brutus now is like, you know what? Fuck you, dude. You're just sucking up to all the wrong people. You can't be trusted. You say you're on our side. You tell him on his side. So Cicero says, come back to Italy with your army. Brutus goes, no, I'm not doing it. I don't know where you stand.
Yeah, I'm alive here. I don't know what I would be in Rome. And to further go into Cicero's position or placating or whatever, I mean, he's talking out against Octavian's stepfather, whatever, Philippus, and Marcellus, his uncle, or through marriage or whatever it is. So he's talking against them in the Senate, but he's still praising Octavius. So I think Cicero is truly trying to have it his way, every way, with everyone. And I think he thinks his golden tongue and sharp wit will get him through there. But it's getting to the point where no one's trusting this guy. And because he has been unofficially in charge of the Senate and pushed some things through that the majority of the Senate did not want to do and did not want to hear. And I think people are just getting a little tired of Cicero and all his shenanigans.
Ronald Syme, in his great book on the Roman Revolution, says Octavianus was a greater danger to the Republic than Antonius. That was the argument of the somber and perspicacious Brutus. Two letters reveal his insight. The one to Atticus, where he writes, what is the point of overthrowing Antonius to install the domination of Octavianus? Cicero is as bad as Salvidinius Rufus. That was one of Octavian's other advisors, along with Agrippa. Right. Men fear death, exile, and poverty too much. Cicero, for all his principles, accommodates himself to servitude and seeks a propitious master. Brutus, for his part, will continue the fight against all powers that set themselves above the law. On receipt of an extract from a letter written by Cicero to Octavianus, the Roman and Republican lost all patience. Read again your words and deny that they are the supplications of a slave to a despot. Cicero had suggested that Octavianus might be induced to pardon the assassins of Caesar. Better dead than alive by his leave. Let Cicero live on in ignominy. That's what Syme says. So Brutus has got pretty much no respect left for Cicero. Yeah. And again, this is the guy who wanted Cicero to take charge of the Republic a year earlier. If it's that...
Yeah. things have changed that much.
It's about a bit more than a year, I guess. We're right. Sort of May, April. Are we? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I know we're going to wrap this episode up soon, but I just want to say so. And again, the events just keep moving at pace, just boom, boom, boom. So in July, and again, I would love to get in a time machine and just know what the origin of this was. In July, a deputation from Caesar, from Octavius's army arrives in Rome. That's about 400 men, so it's just shy of a cohort. But within these 400 men, there are some centurions, and these are very important guys. They're like the aristocracy from their local areas, and they come in and they demand the consulship for Octavian, and they want the full bounty that was promised them. So these are some guys who normally are not in charge of anything, but they've got the swords, they've got the weapons. There's no other army nearby except for more of them, and they're making demands to give Octavian and themselves everything they want.
And that's a subject or a story for the next episode.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, everybody.
Cam.
See you on the Facebooks. If you listen to this and it's around Christmas, which it probably will be, have a safe, happy Christmas. I know a bunch of you are lonely, miserable human beings, drinking alone, thinking about killing yourself. Well, don't.
Don't.
Because you need to know what happens next. Like, what's going to happen is Octavian going to win? Is Cicero going to win? Mark Antony going to win? You don't know. You don't know how it plays out. So you got to stick around.
We don't know.
When you've got the gun barrel in your mouth, just think to yourself, hold on a second. I know I have nothing to live for, but I'm going to stick around for Ray and Cam. Ray and Cam need me.
They need me, so they have someone to tell
this story to. And listen, you want to see and hear the shows that we do in Vegas if you're not there, you know, yourself. You want to see the video. We're going to shoot. We're going to hire a professional crew.
Don't say shoot.
Yeah, don't say shoot. We're going to film. Shit. Stop. We're going to film. Doing some live shows in Vegas. You want to be alive to see that. Just hold on for another month.
Right.
What you do after that, that's up to you. But just hold on for another month.
Exactly. In other words, Merry Christmas.